Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Creative Differences Podcast, the podcast where sometimes we have four hosts, most times we have three hosts, and we always at least have two hosts. Today is one of those two host times. My name is Dallas, and I haven't been this big of a John Cena fan since like 2006. This is such a fun time for me.
I'm Demi, and yesterday I ran a D&D game that included two members of this podcast, neither of which are here, so neither of them can talk about if they had a good time or not. Welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, we are talking about several things. We will be talking about Tron Ares, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Marvel Zombies, and Peacemaker.
Yep. Also, speaking of that D&D game, Cassie was on a video call with us yesterday for that, and she said, and I quote, "You people only get me once a week," so she's not here today. Sorry. We cashed in our once a week for D&D. I told Gabby I was watching a show in which people try to eat a character played by Florence Pugh, and she screamed, "It should have been me," and ran out of the room, never to be seen again. So sorry, we lost Gabby as well. But it's Double D Day. You know what it means. Loyal listeners know that means Dallas and Demi. I don't know what else Double D can mean. Don't worry about it. So before we get into it, please like, please share, please subscribe, hit buttons, hit things, because like, why not, right? It don't cost nothing. Just hit the buttons and go about your day after you listen to the episode, of course.
All right, let's get started. So we're going to start with me talking about Tron Ares, which is directed by Joachim Roening. I have no idea if that's actually how you pronounce his last name, because it has that really special O in there, and I don't know how to pronounce that.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, he directed Young Woman and the Sea, which I hear is very good. He also directed Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, which is the most recent Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Okay.
And it was written by Jesse Wiguto, and he most prominently has written two episodes of Daredevil Born Again. And the movie stars Jared Leto, Greta Lee, Evan Peters, Jodie Turner-Smith, Gillian Anderson, and Jeff Bridges. And the IMDb summary is, a highly sophisticated program, Ares, is sent from the digital world into the real world on a dangerous mission. Sure.
Nice. I don't think I knew that Evan Peters was in this movie.
He is. He's the bad guy.
What? I assume Jared Leto was the bad guy because he's Jared Leto.
Well. No. Yeah, I'm gonna keep this as short as possible. I am a fan of the Tron series. I like the first movie. I love Tron Legacy. This movie is fine. Mm. I remember when they announced it, and I was like, okay, so your lead actor is not anybody who was involved in Tron Legacy, which is that's what I actually want a sequel to. So I guess we're not getting a sequel to that, which is unfortunate. That's the storyline I really wanted to see continue. And they reference it a couple of times in this movie. Maybe if in 15 years when they make Tron 4, they'll finally go back to that storyline.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So this movie is great to look at. The visuals, stunning. Oh my gosh. The effects are insane. The movie just looks so good, just aesthetically. It's so nice to watch. IMAX I recommend because they do the fun little screen moving up and down thing. Really love that.
Oh, yeah.
It's like one of my favorite aspects of watching an IMAX movie, and this movie does it a lot. So if you're going to watch it, I highly recommend seeing it in IMAX while you can. The sound is incredible. The soundtrack slaps. Nine Inch Nails did their thing on this one.
Nine Inch Nails, they're good. They're good for a movie score.
They are. Sitting in the theater and having my seat shake, not because of the sound mix, but just because of the soundtrack alone. Fire experience. Fire. Amazing. The soundtrack hits. It's incredible.
Is it up there with Legacy soundtrack? Because I know Daft Punk did that one.
Yeah, I think both of them are very good soundtracks. Yeah. This one might be a better one. I'd have to go back and listen to both of them. I haven't listened to the Daft Punk one in a while.
Me either. I just remember it slapped.
Both soundtracks slap. At this point, we're just making really long Tron music videos. I don't know what's going on here.
I respect it.
And also the it's got a cast of really great actors.
Yeah.
Yep. That's about it. That's all I got for you guys.
That's all I got.
I don't know. As somebody who is a fan of Tron and like, I understand why Tron Legacy didn't hit the way that I love it. You know, that's not like a general consensus about Tron Legacy. That's just there is a, it's almost like a cult classic sort of thing. There's like a subset of people who are like, yeah, that movie slaps, possibly mostly because of vibes.
All right.
But like, also like the first Tron movie, in my opinion, is extremely ahead of its time, and was kind of prescient in the way that we interact with technology and the idea of like us having digital identities within the digital realm.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting. I think that's cool because we, when the original Tron came out, we were not at that technological stage yet. There was no way that we could have ever thought that we would exist so heavily on the internet and in a digital world. And so I think I really want, and what I really wish for the Tron series, like, because we currently live in such a tech heavy age, and like this movie does touch on like AI and stuff like that, but I'm not quite sure what they're trying to say about those things. And I really want, and I feel like Tron could be a series that talks about our relationship with technology and our relationship with like our digital identities and like ourselves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like,
it does seem to be the best equipped given its like setting and premise.
Yeah. So I really would love for like Tron, the series, to be about like our relationship with technology. I think that's really cool. I think there are some really fascinating and interesting stories you can tell within that realm. And I don't feel like we're using Tron to the best of its potential, which is probably why it's never been a successful franchise.
Which is why they take a couple of decades between movies.
Exactly. But yeah, that's Tron Ares. I don't really have a lot of thoughts about Tron Ares. If you like, and here's the thing, that sounds really, really critical, and it is. Yep. I enjoyed my time in the theater, like,
okay,
brain off, just vibing with the visuals and the audio and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it was cool for a nice little 2-hour movie that takes place, well, partially takes place in the digital world. There's not enough. Mm-hmm. There's not enough stuff in this movie in the digital realm for a Tron movie. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Okay.
But there are a few like references back to like the OG movie and also to Tron Legacy that I very much enjoyed. There's like a section of the movie that like emulates the look of the original Tron, and I love that so much. Like that popped up and I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's so nice. Great.
Yeah, especially to see it because that was what, like 82?
Yeah, it was so, a like, long time ago.
Emulating that now with today's effects would be really dope.
Yeah, and especially because Tron was such a uniquely made movie. No other movie has been made like that, ever.
Mm.
The process of making Tron is a process that I don't think we have ever redone because it was so time-consuming and it did take so much effort to create that visual aesthetic. So yeah, to see it recreated with our current technology was really, really cool, and I really enjoyed that a lot. But yeah, that's
nice.
I liked that part of it. But yeah, that's Tron Ares. The aesthetic of Tron is so cool.
It's a dope look.
Also, there was some wish fulfillment for me because I have always wanted to own a life-sized light cycle. And so to see one in the movie actually just driving down our real world streets, I was like, oh, that's so cool. I want one so bad.
Yeah, I remember that shot in the trailer. I was like, this looks really dope.
It's a stunning movie. It looks amazing. Yeah. Anyway, next movie is Kiss of the Spider-Woman. And it's written and directed by Bill Condon. He directed Dreamgirls and the live-action Beauty and the Beast. He also wrote Chicago and The Greatest Showman.
He's a musical man.
He is. He also directed a Twilight movie, which is not a musical. Oh. So.
All right.
The movie is based on the stage musical by Terrence McNally, and it stars Diego Luna, Tonatia, and Jennifer Lopez. And the IMDb summary is Valentin, a political prisoner, shares a cell with Molina, convicted for public indecency. An unlikely bond forms as Molina recounts a Hollywood musical plot starring Ingrid Luna.
All right.
I really enjoyed this movie. I remember when the trailer first came out, I didn't watch it. I had no idea what it was going to be about. I had no idea what it was. I just knew that Jennifer Lopez was in it. And then I saw the trailer when I went to go watch a movie in theaters. I think it was after I was done with my production, and I saw like 7 movies in a week. And I saw that trailer in front of one of the movies I saw, and I was like, what is this? This looks amazing. I need to see this. I am a lover of musicals. And
true, you are.
Think whatever you want about Jennifer Lopez. I love to see her in a movie. I love me a Jennifer Lopez movie.
I never know what we're gonna get, like, in terms of movie quality, critical reception, like audience takes. Like, whenever Jennifer Lopez is in something, I'm like, what's about to happen? What's the discourse gonna be? What are people gonna say?
And honestly, for me, I don't care what you think. I love a J-Lo movie. I do. I really, right. really do. Man, this movie takes such great advantage of her, like, dancing skills. Like, she is so good. Like, I know Jennifer Lopez is a good dancer. Like, that's
right.
She started out off as a dancer on In Living Color. Like,
yep.
I know that she's a great dancer. That's, like, how she got a singing career in the first place. But, man, in this movie, I was just like, I'm stunned. Because the musical aspect of the movie is kind of paying homage to old school Hollywood. Like, the choreography is so detailed and so, like, complex, I would say, as somebody who is not a dancer.
Right.
And just, like, watching her do it and just effortlessly flow through it, it's, like, stunning. It's absolutely stunning. It's amazing. But the true stars of this movie are Diego Luna and Tonatia, who are playing prisoners in this jail, but are also playing two characters within the musical itself. I love Diego Luna. I do. I really, really do. Somebody watched Andor and said...
I was going to say, is he Andor?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, somebody absolutely watched Andor and said, hey man, call him up to do this movie for us real quick. Can he sing? Does he sing and dance? Okay, yeah, put him in here. We need him because he's kind of playing Andor again, but also having to do like the musical aspect of it as well, playing the romantic lead. Yeah, musical Andor on top of playing a golden age of Hollywood leading man in a musical, which is a lot of fun, and I love that. And just like, the dramatic scenes with him are so good. He's just such a talented actor. And I love watching him. I think the true star of the movie is Tonatia, who I had never heard of before this movie. But oh my gosh, so wonderful. So much charm. His performance, because his performance between the two characters he's playing is so dramatically different. Because on one end, he's playing... So Molina is a very pretty flamboyant gay man.
Okay.
It's stuck in 1983 prison in an Argentinian military dictatorship. Poor man.
Rough.
I don't know. Gender terminology, I think I want to use they for Molina, because while they go by he, him pronouns in the movie, they make it very explicitly clear that they want to be a woman.
Interesting.
Coming out of this movie, I was like, this movie was way more queer than I was anticipating. Like,
right.
We have a whole character who absolutely is trans, but cannot live their life as a trans person. I was like, I got a lot out of this film that I was not anticipating. Okay. Interesting. Tonatia's performance as Molina is just, it's so fun, but also he's so good at being able to play like the fun of telling the plot line of this story. And then immediately, like, having to switch into being afraid for his life or having to go through, like, this traumatic experience of being in jail. He does the switch between those two so beautifully well. He just gives such a great performance. He has a beautiful, beautiful singing voice. And then when he's playing the character within the movie, he's very suave. And he doesn't have an accent. Like, well, he has an accent, obviously. His accent is, like, American. It's Golden Age of Hollywood accent. It's a stunning performance. It's really good, especially for somebody that I've never seen before. I was like, this guy's amazing. I love everything that he does in this film. Just so good. Bill Condon is a director who I love, especially when he's directing musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically because of Dreamgirls. I have such a deep, deep love of Dreamgirls. It might be one of my top 10 favorite movie musicals.
Okay.
I love the way that he uses like the visuals of this film. He understands the spectacle and stylization of doing a musical number and of the golden age of Hollywood. But I also really love the contrast of the way that that looks versus how the jail looks. So like when we go back to the prison scenes, it's very cool colored. It's very kind of looks like it's gritty shot on film. Whereas all the musicals, all the musical movie parts look very glossy and sheen and just like bright colors and very, very warm color palette. I love the contrast between the two. It's very, very good. I'm a musical lover. I'm going to lean very heavily towards liking a musical if you give it to me.
Right.
So I very much enjoyed this film. I didn't know what I was going to get out of it. You even asked me before I went to go see it. You were like, what's it about? And I was like, I don't know, actually. I have no idea. But I really enjoyed it. The political stuff is, it's not like super deep, but I think it's effective. It does what it needs to do. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I would like to go see it again because there were some thoughts that I was having about Molina. When we're watching his interpretation of this movie, what their interpretation says about them, and also how Diego Luna's character, Valentin, how Valentin's reaction to the plot being told to him, what that says about him as a character as well. I think that's really fascinating. And also the idea of how the characters within the musical movie symbolize and represent our characters outside of the musical while they're in prison and their relationship and their dynamic together. So I'd love to see it again just for that, just to look at that aspect alone. I think that's really interesting. But yeah, that's Kiss of the Spider-Woman, a movie that I was not anticipating, but I really, really enjoyed it.
Nice. You love enjoyment.
Thank you. Dallas, tell us about Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, we are in the back half of the podcast, and now it's comic book time. Marvel Zombies is created by Brian Andrews and Zeb Wells. Brian Andrews directed pretty much all of the first two seasons of What If, I think, except for the noir Nebula story, which was one of my favorites.
That's a great
episode.
He did
everything else. It is. Zeb Wells is one of the writers of Deadpool and Wolverine, so he knows how to make Marvel characters violent. He's also an uncredited co-writer on The Marvels and Thor Love and Thunder. The show stars so many people, primarily Iman Vellani, but also prominently features Dominique Thorne, Hailee Steinfeld, Todd Williams, Florence Pugh, David Harbour, Simu Liu, Awkwafina, Randall Park, and Elizabeth Olsen as even scarier Wanda.
She can get scarier?
Surprisingly so, yes.
That's horrifying because she was terrifying in Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah. You know what? She was still scarier in Multiverse of Madness. When Raimi really ramped it up, that was her at her scariest. They do a really good job with her here.
I'm still sad I wasn't there for that review because, man, I had so many thoughts on Elizabeth Olsen in that movie.
I wish you could have been there. It was, I love talking about that movie. Yes, based on the comics of the same name by Robert Kirkman, Mr. Walking Dead. IMDb summary is, after the Avengers are overtaken by a zombie plague, a group of survivors discovers the key to bringing an end to the superpowered undead, racing across a dystopian landscape and risking their lives to save their world. I really like this show. I love What If. I love animation. I love Marvel. I love anthologies. I love spooky stuff. This was made for me, and I appreciate that. It's also a quick little 4-episode miniseries. So
it's only 4 episodes?
It's only 4.
Yo, like, it really, what's up with the animated shows getting like these real, real, really short seasons? Because isn't Eyes on Wakanda also only 4 episodes?
I think it is, yeah. I don't know what these animated anthologies are getting, these short. But they do a lot with these 4 episodes. First thing I'll say is, obviously the show is rated TV-MA for a reason. It is very violent. It is very Robert Kirkman. It's zombies. And that comes with everything that zombies come with, but through the lens of Marvel, which is more fun for me because you get to see Marvel characters using their powers, but also as zombies. And like the way that Scarlet Witch is still able to use her mind powers is absolutely terrifying. Shout out to Iman Vellani. Miss Marvel, I think, is the perfect kind of character for us to focus on because the story and setting are so bleak. But as you know, Kamala Khan is just such a bright spot in the world. And so is Iman Vellani.
So, I love her so much.
She's great. Like, even when it's really bleak, she can play that well, obviously, too. But like, it starts with her hanging out with Ironheart, Riri, and Hailee Steinfeld, Kate. And, you know, it kind of has that Marvel's energy when they're all hanging out in between the really serious stuff.
That is like my favorite stuff from that movie.
It's really good. And unfortunately, you know, this show really has to move it along because it only got 4 episodes. So we don't get a lot of that. It's just kind of like how we start. But as we go on and pick up more characters, like Todd Williams is great. He's playing Blade Knight, which is what we're all calling this version of Blade, who is the avatar of Khonshu in this universe.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's super dope. Like, and Todd Williams is doing a very good Mahershala impression. He's my favorite character. Like, one of the things I wrote down was Marvel said, Blade, we won't give you a movie, but we'll let you be the coolest character in an animated show.
No.
Like, sorry, Blade, you can't have a movie, but here you go, bro. And it worked for me. Like, he really, it makes me a little more upset that we're not getting the Blade movie. But this is a different version anyway. But just like the calm stoicism that Blade has, in addition to like being able to see things before other people do because Khonshu was there. And there's this running joke of obviously no one else can see or hear Khonshu. So for a while, they all just assume Khonshu was like an imaginary friend that this dude has. Until they need to go to New Asgard. And your girl, Valkyrie, is in it. Shout out Tessa Thompson.
Hey.
She shows up and she's like, this is not a place for mortals. Y'all can kick rocks. And then Khonshu like busts out and is like, yo, what's going on? Y'all don't recognize me no more? Like, y'all acting brand new in Asgard? Y'all don't recognize my deity? And she's like, oh, snap, Khonshu, what's up, bro? Come on in. Y'all got it? Y'all good? They with you? And they bring everybody in. But of course, only people who can see this are Valkyrie and Blade. So everybody else is just like, I don't know what just happened. Whatever. But yeah, they get some great stuff with the Asgardian stuff. Shang-Chi and Katie show up and they kind of have their own Mad Maxian like faction that includes Randall Park's character and Death Dealer, which is great because Death Dealer is such a dope looking character to me and I always want to see more of him.
Yeah.
We get Baron Zemo essentially being like a villain from The Walking Dead, the type who like takes over a certain spot and is like, I'm running this, but also I'm bad because of course I am. I'm Zemo. Red Guardian's awesome. He's always awesome. I love him in everything. He becomes buddies with Jimmy Woo and it's my favorite thing in the world. Yelena is back. She's awesome. It's just, there's so much in the show that I like. And I think a lot of it is I didn't expect it to go as hard as it does with like some of the violence and some of the bleakness. Because when they did the zombie episode of What If, they still had to kind of color in the lines of the What If rating and everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's like, yeah, we got zombies, but it's mostly Peter Parker trying to keep everything light. And then like Ant-Man just quipping, like undercutting every serious moment with a silly line. And this show really lets the moments sit. Like, obviously I'm not going to say who lives, who dies, who tells your story. But, people die.
People die.
And there's a few times, like one of the episodes follows a pretty major character death and you just kind of like have to sit with it and the credits roll. And it's like, oh, this is a different kind of MCU content. We're just going to have to sit with our sadness. But yeah, I think they balance those tones well because the fun stuff is still fun. There are obviously going to be some quippy characters because it's Marvel. And Elizabeth Olsen, she does her thing. She is, she's not just going like, spooky zombie noises. As Scarlet Witch, she's able to like project things. So she can project herself as normal Wanda.
Nice.
Which is scary because she comes up and she's like, oh, everything's good, guys. Just like come here, join me. I cured myself. We're all good. And she's trying to get Kamala. She's always trying to get a teenager for their powers. And in this story, she's trying to get Kamala pretty much the whole time.
Maybe they should stop doing that.
But
that's,
yeah,
an interesting pattern.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a, I had a nickel. Weird that I have it twice. But yeah,
it's happened too many times.
If you're into too many times, too many. If you're into the Marvel stuff and or zombie stuff, definitely recommend it. And you know, it's a short run, so it's not gonna be, if you watch it and you're like, ah, it's not really for me, it was only 4 episodes. You're fine. But yeah, that's Marvel Zombies. Had a good time.
Cool, cool, cool. That takes us to our last thing, which is Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, the headliner. All right. Peacemaker is created by James Gunn. Y'all know James Gunn. We talk about him a lot.
A lot.
The show stars, well, I guess I should, for people who don't know James Gunn, he made the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. he made The Suicide Squad, not to be confused with Suicide Squad. Obviously, he made Peacemaker, Slither, Superman. He's been around.
Creature Commandos.
Creature Commandos. He's been busy. And the show stars John Cena, Danielle Brooks, Freddie Stroma, Jennifer Holland, Steve Agee, Robert Patrick, and this season, Frank Grillo. Based on the comics character of the same name, but obviously not the James Gunn version, so that's a different version of the character. The IMDb summary is from season one, so I ain't got it. Just know Peacemaker's back, baby. And this isn't the summary, it's just my opinion. Even better than last season, I would say, for me.
Ooh, interesting. I do like that. I don't know if I can say which one is better for me. I think that I really enjoy, though, that instead of going like the first season was very balls to the wall, crazy ridiculousness.
Mm-hmm.
With all the aliens and stuff like that, very comedic. I did appreciate that this season felt a lot more personal and almost insular, smaller story.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of shows try and just go bigger and better for like season two in the same way that movies try and go bigger and better for their sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I felt like this was better because it didn't try to be bigger. It just kind of tried to be a smaller story, but while also focusing in on like the arc that Peacemaker has been on since first season.
Yes.
And how he's changed between that first episode and the finale of that season. And now he's a different person. So how is he going to grow beyond that? Or how is he going to regress? Who knows?
Right.
For me, I think last season's like MVP character was Peacemaker. Like the way that they made us go from hating him in the suit, like the way that James Gunn, his writing, made us go from hating him in the Suicide Squad to loving mm-hmm. him on his own show. Like, I would never have seen that coming. I was like, there's no way you can make me love this character, but I do. I love Chris Smith. I love Peacemaker for all the flaws that he possibly has as a human being, which there are quite a number. We see them in this season. But I think my MVP character for season two is actually Harcourt. I liked Harcourt. I love Harcourt now.
I feel that. And I feel like for me, Harcourt is where I was with Peacemaker last season. And I think the reason that I love Peacemaker so much this season is because it's funny. It's kind of like when we were hanging out a couple of days ago and I was talking about how I like Rush Hour 2 because we've already gotten through the rough part of they're just being mean to each other. So like Peacemaker season one, we're watching his development into the character that he's going to be in season two. In season two, I already love him. So just watching him for these eight episodes being the character I love more, love that. And Harcourt for me, I'm watching her in season two get to that end point. And obviously, Jennifer Holland is killing it.
She's so good this season.
Whether the character's getting on my nerves or not, her performance is fantastic.
I never want to hear another person complain about James Gunn hiring his wife to be on this show. She's so good.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, yeah, there's nothing you can say to make me think you don't believe she's doing a great job. you're just not watching the show if you don't think she's doing a great job. And a lot of the moments that are my favorite are just, like, these emotional moments. Like, there's a part, I think it's episode three, like, when he's talking to, let's call her Harcourt 2.
Yeah.
And then the whole Sons of Liberty stuff happens. And I'm like, oh, right. An action scene. I didn't even realize we hadn't really gotten one. Like, we're just watching them talk. And I was invested. I was like, right, this is a superhero show. And I wasn't even thinking, like, where's the superhero stuff? Where's the action? Because they were just doing it so well. And James Gunn is just so good at giving us these flawed characters that we love. And man, Harcourt is that.
Another great scene between them is, well, not between those particular two characters, but still those two actors. episode 7, where they're in the interrogation. I think that's episode 7. It might be episode 6, where they're in the interrogation room together. And they're like having that conversation about, like, it's partially about like their feelings and all that stuff. But like,
oh, yeah, that's episode 6.
I only remember that it was episode 6 because I was like, wait, no, because episode 7 starts with the thing. But no, episode 6, that scene is so good. Like that for me, I'm really starting to love James Gunn's style of and listening to the podcast has also made me sort of like really take note of what his style has become in over the years, especially more recently.
Yeah.
I've complained a lot about lack of blocking in movies recently.
Yeah.
And man, the scene of them in that cell and talking to each other and just like their motion, their actions and their physicality just and where they're moving in the room, just kind of like indicating those emotional beats and stuff like that. So good. Yeah. Up there with the Superman and Lois interview scene from earlier this year that James Gunn also did.
Mm-hmm.
I love that he does that stuff because I feel like it's been missing, and it's so it keeps you very much engaged because not only is the writing very good, but also what you're actually watching is engaging to watch as well.
Yeah, like you don't just have two people standing in a room saying these devastating lines, like we're actually getting them.
We're also not just you know, just switching back and forth between close-ups. Like there is movement. There's a dynamic like movement going with it that makes it all the more it like amps it up even more. And that's the beauty of filmmaking, really. And that's it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But also those two actors are phenomenal in that scene.
Yeah, like John Cena, the acting this season.
He's so good. And that's why I keep telling people, like, in my opinion, he's like the second best wrestler turned actor as of right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good as Peacemaker.
He is really good. He is really good. There's a in the next episode when he like
screams
because of what's happening. It's so unsettling because it's not. And I think they talk about that on the podcast, too. It's not this like big, like masculine alpha male like. It's like a vulnerable, high pitched,
childlike.
Yeah. And it's just he's killing it. He's killing it.
He's very, very good. And he's also grown as an actor since first season. So,
yeah, which is great.
I already thought he was really good in first season, but he's incredibly good in season two. Again, we already said Jennifer Holland is fantastic. Her action sequence from episode one, like kind of kicking us off for her story arc for the season, was amazing. I love that scene so much because not only is it a really cool action scene, but it's also a very good character moment of like really seeing where she is in life and how she's feeling.
Yeah.
Because you can see that she's like asking for it.
Yeah.
And that's such it's such good storytelling through action.
It's rough. And just like, she's such an interesting character because you get these emotional moments, but through this, for lack of a better term, such a dickhead lens. Like when the therapist is saying like, you suffer from toxic masculinity. And of course the reveal is that he's talking to her of all people. And she just starts cussing him out. And it's just like kind of proving the point there, Hardcore.
It's like you are Hardcore. You're suffering from toxic masculinity somehow. But also our other characters. I've always loved Adebayo. Adebayo is so cool.
Same.
And just like such a nice character. I love her relationship with Chris, with Peacemaker. I feel like it's such a, that was kind of like the heart of the first season, was this woman who shouldn't be friends with Peacemaker, but she has such a kind heart that even she can see what a good guy Peacemaker is deep down underneath it all, if you can just pull it out of him and like becoming best friends with him. So I really like watching their friendship this season.
Yeah, it's great.
And then like, also Vigilante, but you know.
Vigilante. He's so funny. He became, it's funny, obviously, you know, he's a murdering psychopath. But in season one, when he started going off on those white supremacists in jail.
Yeah.
Talking about Black history, I was like, okay, he's my favorite character. Like, every character with a scene like this has to be my favorite. But he's just so ridiculous. And it's kind of a testament to James Gunn being so good at comedy writing that he can write a lot of similar beats with certain characters and they still hit. Like, how many times is Vigilante going to say, quiz me on insert animal here facts
and not know like, any of them?
He does it through the whole season. And I love it every time. Just like with Economos, like being out of his depth and then someone calls him out on being bad at a thing. And he's like, yeah, I never said I was good at this thing. It's his whole vibe is, no, I'm not good at stealth. No, I'm not good at improvising. Yes, I am bad in social situations. But man, he's great.
I also loved kind of getting to see Vigilante and Adebayo sort of build a friendship, because it's so obvious that Vigilante is jealous of Adebayo because of her friendship with Peacemaker. He just won't say it out loud. But like getting to watch them actually become friends. And like there's a point in the season where like he's crying on her shoulder. And I was just like, this is so tender and so sweet and something that you wouldn't anticipate from a character like Vigilante, because he is so the way he is.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
This is also a man who just yells at his mom for the sake of, like, yelling at his mom. It's so awful. I hate it.
It's the most upsetting thing in the whole show to me is the way he treats his mom.
Which is crazy, so because nice. Vigilante has murdered children. Like,
he's a crazy person.
He's crazy.
It's like, yo, bro, if you gotta kill a graffiti tagger or whatever, that sucks and I hate it. But be nicer to your mom. She is so sweet.
I will say that I think my only, like, downside to this season is that because of the story that they are telling, there isn't as much, like, of the 11th Street kids, like, hanging out and, like, interacting with one another in the same way that season one had a lot of it, because they were more of a team in season one. And in this season, right, they're friends, but they're all kind of going through their own life stuff that's sort of keeping them, like, apart from one another.
And, yeah, and being on, like, as far as professionally, being on opposite sides, not in a way that, like, makes them betray each other, but it's like Economos is still working for Argus, so he has to be over there.
Harcourt is trying to get a job.
Exactly. So it's like, but yeah.
Adebayo's trying to start a business, you know.
This thing was so funny when she gets that call from a dude who clearly thinks that she is a prostitute.
Yep.
And Vigilante's just, like, noticing, like, not really judging, because he's like, oh, okay, you know, whatever, do the thing. And then after, he's like, oh, that guy clearly thought you were a prostitute.
Again, the building of the Vigilante and Adebayo friendship is so good.
Yeah, it's great. So much about the show is great.
I do like our new characters on the show. I liked Flurry, played
by Flurry, Tim Meadows.
Yeah, Tim Meadows playing Flurry is so ridiculous.
He's so extra.
And so extra, but also I think him being so extra makes the moments where, like, he's genuine really pop.
Yes, and so he's one of he's the type of character for me that walks that line between funnier and more annoying. Because, like, sometimes I have a line, I'm like, all right, man, let's just move on. And sometimes he gets me. But all of that, like you said, when he tells, like, Economos, like, that's a good thing that you did, it's good that you did that, I was, like, waiting for some kind of dumb joke to follow. And then it didn't. I was like, oh, he has another side to him.
And even he has moments sort of like that where he doesn't actually say a line. He'll just give a look. Like, there's that look that he gives Rick Flagg towards the end of the season, where he clearly doesn't, like, it seems like he doesn't trust Flagg's decision making, but he doesn't say it out loud. But you can see it on his face. And it's like, ooh, that's interesting. Because this is a guy who mostly makes a lot of jokes. But when he's serious, it's like it sticks out to you.
Yeah. And I think the one that really got me was in the last episode, when a character that he's, like, giving a hard time to the whole time, something happens to that character and he's, like, very upset by it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, he's a jerk, but he sees that as, like, bonding with the guys. Like, I was watching the new Rockstars video, and that he kind of equated it to, like, in a war movie when the soldiers are giving each other crap and before, you know, they all start dying in the war scenes. But yeah, it's like he sees that as, like, oh yeah, we're bonding,
we're roasting each other, even though he's the only one roasting anybody.
Yeah, and they don't like it and they don't want him to do it. But then when something actually happens to that guy, he's, like, very upset.
Yeah, he cares about them, but he's also just going to make a lot of fun of them before we actually get into anything serious. I like the character of Agent Bordeaux. Bordeaux's a cool character.
I like Bordeaux more after the season ended.
Yeah.
Like that turn that we kind of got toward the end. Because at first, she kind of felt like generic badass agent for a bit. Like, oh, I'm good at shooting. I'm no nonsense.
She's also a metahuman.
Yeah. But then toward the end, I'm like, okay, there's another side to you that I like. You're more of a character than, like, an archetype now, and I like that.
I like the inclusion of Rick Flagg in the season. We had a very interesting conversation about Rick Flagg the other day. I do love that. I do like the character, though. I like the character because of the very conflicting feelings that I have about him as a person.
Yeah, he's a good antagonist for this show. Like, very effective.
He's not a good guy.
No.
But he's also not... He's not... He's not a villain... But he's also not a good person.
Right. And to me, he crosses that line into villain with the last episode.
Yes, but I feel like it's interesting to me because I think there is like he can still be pulled back. Like there's still that chance that like, yes, he's on a revenge arc, and there's still the chance that he could potentially see the error of his ways and go back and, you know, draw himself back and be still not, in my opinion, a good guy, but
right.
He doesn't have to be a villain anymore. But right now he's definitely stuck in the underworld. He's stuck in his feelings and he's got to move past it. And I think it's really interesting though, because I think it's a good other side of the coin of Harcourt, who we find out finally why Harcourt has always hated Peacemaker this season.
Right. Yeah.
And so they're like opposite ends of the same coin, where Harcourt, you know, finds a way to find a positive relationship to have with Peacemaker. Rick Flagg Sr. cannot do the same thing.
Yeah. Which I get. Like, I get why you're doing everything you're doing from an emotional standpoint.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. But it does lead to making decisions that I personally think are dumb decisions. But like, that's how you end up being a villain. So,
yes. And speaking of villains, this show toward the end did something interesting that I think kind of happens with The Boys. Like, remember when toward the end of the previous season of The Boys, we get that like assassination storyline that kind of lined up with an actual assassination attempt happening?
Yes.
And it was like the way they were writing so close to our reality kind of lined up. For me, when he starts talking about like, we're going to get the metahumans, we're going to get the bad ones and put them in here, it felt very, very ICE-ish to me.
Yeah.
And like,
indiscriminate imprisonment is not good.
Right. And especially because his whole energy is, we're going to make it safe. We're going to get the bad ones. We're going to get all the bad guys and get them off the streets and blah, blah, blah. But obviously, you know that his plan is to just put whomever he doesn't like in there.
And I think the other problem with that is, like, because we know, and I don't want to spoil how we get to that point, but because right. we know how he gets that idea, like the who's pulling the strings of that idea, it does feel like you're not going to only throw the bad guys in there.
Yeah.
Because the person pulling your strings doesn't want to only throw the bad guys in there. We know specifically who he wants really in there.
Exactly.
Which is why I'm like, Rick Flagg's not a villain, but he is having his strings pulled by a villain.
And this feels like a good time to say, because I haven't said it yet today, ICE is trash. If you support ICE, you are whack. Dean Cain, you a suck-ass nigga.
ICE is evil. I do want to give a shout-out to David Denman, who plays Keith.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed his portrayal of Keith. I also really enjoyed the way that James Gunn wrote the character in a way of really making us like this guy and making us understand why Peacemaker would really want to stay in that universe and why he would want to have his brother around and like why he really misses his brother. And then we see a whole new side of him and that, you know.
Hey. And effectively makes it even more effective when we see the other side of Robert Patrick's character over there.
Yeah.
Augie 2. And it's just like, oh, that's not what I expected at all. Because when everybody started theorizing like, oh, this is what that world is, I was like, oh no, Augie about to be rough over there. But then we get the reveal of like how he is versus how Keith is, and he's like, yo man, what are you doing? We don't do that, come on. And I was like, oh, that was a nice twist, which, you know, had a devastating end.
Yeah. I'm interested to see where season 3 will go, because I feel
also
it's gotta be a season
James Gunn
three.
Did announce that there are no plans for season 3 which annoys me.
Wait, no. You can't write that ending and then not have plans for
that's what I'm saying.
Well, okay, and here's the thing. No. Lies and slander. Here's the thing. Because if this were like a normal TV show, then I'd be like, well, no, you messed up for that. But because James Gunn is in charge of the DCU, and this show is, as we have now seen, so connected to Superman, which came out earlier this year, usually I'd be like, yo, that's messed up. But now I'm like, wait, hold on. Just because there's no plan for a Peacemaker season 3 doesn't mean that there are no plans for where Peacemaker will pop up next.
Yeah, and personally,
hopefully Harcourt as well.
Right. As someone who watches all these things, it's not really an inconvenience. Like, it doesn't affect me too much, but I do still have that gripe with, I guess let's call it the MCUification of like
the cinematic universe thing.
Yeah, having to watch a movie and then watch a show or two in between the next movie, or vice versa. Like having to watch a show and then watching a movie or two in between the next show is like, yo, man, if this is how season two ends, give me a season three and resolve it.
I would really like a season three because, like, first off, we ended off on a cliffhanger, a crazy cliffhanger at that. But, like, on top of that, episode seven, which feels, we talked about this off mic, but that one feels more like the season finale than episode eight does.
Right.
On like, but it's the external conflict versus the internal conflict. The internal conflict is solved in episode eight. So
yeah,
it's a good emotional resolve versus episode seven being a really good like physical resolve to the problem. But episode seven has, it leaves one of the characters off with a very good villain origin story and a very good opening to come back. And that's what it feels like season three was building to on top of the whole thing that Peacemaker's got going on at the end there. So I would like to see that go somewhere. Like, there are threads that have been left untied that I'm like, let's tie those bad boys up.
Yeah, because the example I always give, and obviously, like, for people like us, this is no issue because we are in the know of, like, all of this stuff. But, like, imagine someone watching Doctor Strange and then hearing there's a Doctor Strange 2 and then watching Doctor Strange 2.
Nah, you can't even do that, bro.
You can't. You'd be so confused. And it's just like, obviously you can find the information and everything, but just like trying to watch, oh, that's number one, this number two, your head would explode trying to catch all that.
Yeah. But I also feel like I'm hopeful that James Gunn's universe won't be that interconnected though, that interwoven. He always makes it sound like it's not going to be. Like, I feel like when you go see Supergirl, you're not going to have to go watch Superman to understand what Supergirl was doing before this movie starts. Like, I think you can just go see Supergirl.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think it helps that he is the one, like, he's
the top dog,
Kevin Feige, but he's also making this show and he made Superman and he's like, so it's not like we have a guy overseeing and then we have a bunch of different people making all the things. And obviously James Gunn isn't making everything.
Yeah.
But up to this point, he made Superman and he made Peacemaker and he made Creature Commandos. So everything is connected through one vision.
And even then, I don't feel like you have to watch Creature Commandos in order to understand what's going on in Superman or even Peacemaker.
Right.
Even Peacemaker, you don't have to go watch the Suicide Squad to understand what's happening in Peacemaker. Like, James Gunn gives you enough exposition to be like,
exactly,
this thing happened and now this character's mad.
Yeah, he lays that out for you. But yeah, I want a season three.
I would love a season three.
I really like the show. This is one of my favorite shows of the year so far. So I am here for it.
Yeah, it's also one of my favorite shows of the year. And it didn't take much, too. It only took a few episodes for me to be like, this is going to be in my top 10.
Yeah, it's definitely in there for me. Yeah, it's
might get an actor on there, too. Maybe.
I got at least one.
I think Jennifer Holland earned it. I feel like she earned it.
Yeah, I might have two from Peacemaker this year. We'll see where the year shakes out. We still got a couple months left.
We do. We do indeed. Well, we got like a month and a half left for when we actually start recording them.
True.
All right, that's all of them.
Is everything.
I want to do the thing that I've been doing recently, which is we haven't been collecting news, but do you have anything that is coming up that you are excited about that you will most likely end up talking about on the podcast?
I forget every time that you do this, so you go first while I try to think of it.
Okay, so I've got like three things. So they just recently released an extended preview for The Vampire Lestat. Cassie got me into Interview with the Vampire, the TV series, and it's honestly one of the most underrated shows on television. If you are not watching it, I highly recommend it. Please go watch it. It's such a good series. I recommended it to one of the writers that I just worked with, and he sent me a text after we finished production and he had not had the time to start watching it. And he was like, dang it, Demi, this is so good. And now I have like he's like, I got like 12 hours of TV that I got to watch now. And I was like, most underrated show on television right now. I promise you it is. Highly recommend watching it. Catch it before season three starts. I'm very excited about season three. It looks like it's mostly going to follow Lestat, obviously, because the show has been retitled The Vampire Lestat. Right. but I'm very excited. I know a few details from like the series of novels that these are all based off of. So I kind of have an idea of where this story is going. And the trailer just looks so fun. I'm excited to see Lestat be a rock star. And I love the idea of getting to see him and Louis interact in the modern era. Because just they're so toxic, and it'll be so fun to see that in the modern era and not just as a period piece. Also, they announced who they cast as Akasha, and that's a casting announcement I've been waiting to see, because Akasha was kind of made iconic by rest her soul, Aaliyah, in Queen of the Damned.
Right.
And everybody who I hear talk about that movie is like, that movie sucks. Aaliyah's amazing. Which is why I want to watch it, because Aaliyah is wonderful, and I just want to see her performance. It's apparently iconic, so I was very hopeful that they would cast a Black actress to play Akasha again, and they did. So I'm very, very happy. Her name is Sheila Atim. She was in The Woman King, for those who don't know who she is.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm very excited.
Sheila Atim is also in Marvel Zombies, because she's also in Multiverse of Madness. She is one of the sorcerers.
HBO just released a trailer for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which looks like the most wholesome thing to ever come out of Game of Thrones. So,
okay,
I'm very excited about that. It was interesting watching the trailer because, like, visually, obviously, it looks like Game of Thrones. You want it to look like it takes place in that same universe, but like you're watching these people interact, and I'm like, I don't think I'm going to see anybody like get decapitated or anybody's guts come flying out. I don't think we're going to talk a lot about incest or anything like that, which feels love very that. Nice. I love it. Even though there are Targaryens on the show, obviously. But who knows? I could be wrong. But it looks very wholesome in comparison to everything that else that Game of Thrones has done. It follows the adventures of, I think it's Duncan Egg. I think the knight's name is Duncan. The kid he has with him is named Aegon. Aegon is a very important name in the Game of Thrones universe. To anybody who follows, they know. But yeah, I'm excited to see it, just for like kind of the tonal change of that universe, just to see what that's like. Because yeah, it seems like this is a story of, you know, we love a good sad dad and his found child story.
You're right.
And that's what this looks to be, except for the sad dad looks a little young to be a dad. But he's a young knight who finds this kid, and I guess they go on adventures together. And I like that. That sounds very sweet.
Okay.
And then the last thing is they released the trailer for The Mighty Nein, which comes out next month. It takes place in the world of Exandria, which is the Critical Role universe. So it takes place in the same world as The Legend of Vox Machina. So if you are a fan of The Legend of Vox Machina, you will probably enjoy The Mighty Nein. There will be 8 episodes from my understanding, but they will also be almost an hour long, which is insane for an animated show.
Okay.
And they said that the story is going to play out a little differently than like the format that they have the Vox Machina in. So I'm very excited to see. I have not watched that campaign before. I've seen like the first 2 episodes of it, and that's about it. So I'm excited to see what the story is. I do know who all of these characters are, though, and I do enjoy them a lot. So I look forward to it. Also, they cast 3 Disney princesses to guest star on this show, which I think is incredible. I ain't never heard of an animated show that got 3 Disney princesses just in a season. That's insane.
Who do they get?
They have Ming-Na Wen, they have Anika Noni Rose, and they have Auli'i Carvalho.
Nice.
So, 3 of my favorite Disney princesses on one of what is probably going to be one of my favorite animated shows, and potentially one of my favorite animated shows just in general of this year. So, super excited. Mark Strong is also going to be on the show. They've got a stacked cast once again. So, yeah, I'm excited. Trailer looks really good. Looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. The animation looks sick. So, super excited. Dallas, did you think of anything in the time span that it took me to talk about those 3 things?
I did. Last night, after we got home from our fun times, I watched the trailer for Wonder Man.
I still have not watched it. How is it?
It's interesting. It is very, very heavily focused on the aspect of him being an actor.
Yeah, that's like, Simon.
Yeah, to the point where if you don't know what Wonder Man is and just saw this trailer, you just think it's a show about a dude trying to be an actor, like Entourage or like some like the studio type of show. And I'm here for it. It is being released under the Marvel Spotlight banner, which is like, you know, more grounded,
interesting,
less impact on the big narrative. So honestly, if this turns out just to be about Yaya trying to get acting roles, I'm still going to be down for it.
It also sounds like, because I remember when we talked about Ironheart, I said that Ironheart doesn't feel like a superhero show because it's not really about Riri trying to save the world or anything. It's really just about her own personal problems and her own personal mess. And she just happens to solve that with an iron suit.
Right.
It kind of feels like we're falling in that direction with Wonder Man as well, where it's going to be just about Simon and whatever issues he manages to get himself into, it will be solved with Simon's powers, I'm going to assume.
Right. And one thing I didn't know is that X Mayo from The Blackening is on this show. And I think she plays his agent.
Oh my gosh. This is going to be great.
She's so great. She's like the... There's so many standouts in The Blackening, but she's definitely one of them. So now I'm even more excited for it. And it comes out January 27th, I think.
Okay.
So
at long last.
I'm ready for it. Yeah.
There are certain Marvel shows that are finally coming out like this year and next year that we have been talking about since they were announced. So we've been talking about them on this podcast for years.
Quite some time.
Like, we start talking about them when they are announced at, like, D23 and Comic-Con and stuff, and we're like, years later, yep, so this thing is finally happening.
Yeah.
We made it, y'all.
We made it. Thank you for listening. We always appreciate you, especially if you get all the way to the end. We appreciate you even more. Crown Digital, Brandon and Io, we appreciate you as well for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Demi, we appreciate you for editing and putting us on YouTube. Coming through with the movie reviews.
Hey.
Going to be for Peacemaker, representing for the Tron fans.
Yeah, I go see the movies that the rest of you guys won't.
Yeah, I think between the four of us, we have a good like coverage of everything. Like if it's spooky, I'm going to see it, and then Cassie will see it later when it's not in theaters anymore. You know, Gabby's here once in a blue moon, but you'll pretty much watch whatever's not spooky. I think we can count on you for the most part. I think the only thing that we know you won't watch is if it's scary.
And even then, sometimes you might get me. I did go see Sinners, guys.
We might get you every once in a while. When a great black director is coming out with a Nope or a Sinners, we're going to get you in there.
Every so often. Even Peele gets me occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, audience, back to you. If you want to reach us, you always can in the comments. Feel free. There's lots of room down there in the comments section. Come fill it up. Or you can hit us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast, Facebook.com/Creative Differences PC, or TikTok at Creative Differences Pod. If you want to talk to me about my renewed love for John Cena, you can find me on Instagram or Letterboxd at A King Named Simba. Or Serialize, because that's where I'm talking about wrestling.
Fair. Next time you guys hear from me, I will be a changed person because I will finally have seen Renee rap in concert. But also, hey. Critical Role is back for Campaign 4, and I'm so happy about it. I don't really have any place to talk about it. But if you guys want to check out my Letterboxd reviews, you guys can find them at Demi Joie. Joie is spelled J-O-I-E. I occasionally write a review. Sometimes I just give a star rating. But yeah, I have fun over there. That's like the most social media I'm doing right now.
Fair. If you want to find Cassie, she is currently on Blue Sky at Do You Want to Taste It? Yes, I do. It's a long name. I've told her it's too long. But you know.
We didn't talk about the opening credit sequence.
We didn't. I'm still kind of mad that they changed the song. I don't have a problem with this one. I just really love Wigwam's Do You Want
to
Taste It?
I grew to enjoy it. And I really enjoy that James Gunn is almost using these opening dance numbers as a way of telling the story of the season without
That's
giving
cool.
spoilers away. That's really awesome.
That is pretty great. Also, Gabby. You want to find Gabby? She's on Blue Sky. What's her Blue Sky? Eat me like a zombie.
Man.
All one word.
There's a lot of eating going on with these names.
It's a lot of eating going on. I mean, talk to Cassie and Gabby. They're like...
In the words of Lois Lane, do you eat?
Do you eat? Wow. All right. It's been different. Bye.
Bye.
Speaking of eating.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to me, you're the only one here, so this question is for you.
God.
If you had to be eaten by a Marvel character.
Oh, God.
Who would you choose?
You already know what my answer is.
Let the people know.
It's Natasha Romanoff.
Yeah, I figured.
Who would you choose?
Storm.
Good choice.
Gotta be Storm.
Is it storming when it happens or just...
I mean, you know, whatever she want to do. Rain or shine, we eating.